Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of March 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And your readers today are Frieda Bates.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And now we get on to the Hampshire Chronicle. There's a lovely picture of Winchester Cathedral choir boys trying to flip pancakes on the front page. But the main headlines don't actually cover that. They are anger over A31 lorry park, best pub in the UK, and ex-cons hostel set for closure. So can we please have the story behind the first headline, Frieda?
Yes. Plans for lorry park on A31 spark fury. Hampshire Highways says the 5 kilometre section of the A31 dual carriageway between Winchester and Alresford has the potential to hold between 200 and 300 lorries. Should the lorry park be needed, the eastbound carriageway would take both sets of traffic on a contraflow, which would cause traffic delays. Responding to the fury, Winchester Steve Brine MP said, "For a start, the PM has confirmed Parliament will have to agree to our leaving the EU with no withdrawal agreement in place, and I'm confident we won't allow that. But on the A31 specifically, I'm clear this work is the wrong response from the LRF, which is contrary to the modelling provided by the DIT. Department for Transport, around lorry movement from Portsmouth, should there be any interruption to the roll-on, roll-off process. But if, and they can answer why they're doing this, they insisted on going ahead, it's unacceptable not to inform local residents, and that goes for local councillors as much as anyone else." Liberal Democrat Winchester City councillors have also slammed Mr. Brine for not being aware of the works. County and City Councillor Jackie Porter said, "It is extraordinary that we and our MP have only just heard about this panic proposal by the county to use the A31 in the case of a no-deal Brexit, just days before implementation. It's a measure which will have a significant impact on the whole of Winchester and Alresford in particular. The last time the A31 was used as a vehicle park was during World War II, when Britain fought for our friends in Europe. It is ironic to see it used again, as the government now plans to do just the opposite." City Councillor Kim Gottlieb added, "In a classic example of joined-up government planning, someone must have forgotten to tell Steve Brine about the proposal to create a lorry park on a major thoroughfare just outside Winchester. So certain was he that the stories about a lorry park on the M3, which began to circulate several weeks ago, he wrote to a local resident to say, 'Sorry to spoil the party, but it seems fake news even reaches Hampshire.' As previously reported, it was rumoured a stretch of the M3 would be used as a lorry park in the event of a no-deal Brexit. However, this was denied by Transport Secretary Chris Grayling. In a letter to Mr. Brine, he said, 'We have no plans whatsoever to close the M3 or any other roads outside Kent in a no-deal scenario.' Mr. Brine is yet to respond to claims he was not aware of the works. Defending the scheme, Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, 'As part of the Hampshire LRF, we're supporting plans to mitigate the potential impact of increased freight traffic around Portsmouth and the effect this could have on local communities. We've identified a stretch of the A31 to complement the work going on at Tipner, making sure we're as prepared as we can be in this uncertain situation. I would like to reassure local residents that careful preparations are in hand through the LRF. A Hampshire County Council spokeswoman added, "The Local Resilience Forum, LRF, has identified the impact of a no deal to be mainly on the Port of Portsmouth. We are not so concerned about Southampton because of the different kind of freight, but Portsmouth has been identified as an area where contingency planning needs to be put in place. The LRF has scoped a number of options for potential triage and holding sites for the anticipated additional numbers of lorries that may be delayed at the ports due to slower turnaround times, or who may choose to access Portsmouth rather than use services at Dover." Chairman of the LRF Strategic Coordinating Group, Neil Odin, Chief Fire Officer for Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services, said, "Our role within the LRF is to plan for the reasonable worst-case scenarios set out in the government's contingency planning assumptions. We have been working extremely hard to identify what that is and look at the ways we can mitigate and manage the risks that are likely to arise. Within Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, the planning has focused on disruption at the roll-on, roll-off port of Portsmouth and the resulting impact any delay would have on the surrounding road network and beyond, on communities attempting to navigate their way around the city, the close proximity of the naval base and the reliance of the Channel Islands on the port for supplies. Due to the length of time required to ensure these measures are up and running in the event of exiting the EU without a withdrawal agreement on March the 29th, and with that option still a possibility, our partners have had to invoke emergency plans to make this happen within the required timescale." Now, there is a photograph, a small one, of lorries on the A256 outside Dover, presumably parked at some time in the past when a similar emergency has arisen. And it doesn't look good.
And here's a piece of good news for discriminating local drinkers. The headline is, "Once Under Threat Village Pub Hailed as Best in UK." A Winchester rural pub that stood empty just 4 years ago has just been crowned the country's best in the prestigious Camera Awards. The Wanston Arms in Sutton Scotney was presented with the accolade on February the 28th after being named National Pub of the Year for 2018. As previously reported, the pub had been set to close in 2015 with developers eyeing the land, but after more than a decade as a regular, current landlord and owner Matt Todd dropped his life in the world of corporate marketing and stepped up to buy the pub. Matt said, "I'm overwhelmed that our little pub, which had been handed a death sentence 4 years ago, has now been named the very best in the country. I've striven to recreate the kind of pub I went to in the 1970s with my dad when I was a young boy in the north of England. The support from the local community and beyond has been overwhelming, helping us to propel us forward despite these testing times." Since reopening the pub, Matt has focused on benefiting the community, making it an important asset for residents as well as a successful business. Alongside a selection of carefully kept cask ales and a gin bar with 180 varieties, the Wanston Arm boasts a range of pop-up foodie nights and social events, as well as fundraising. To date, it's raised more than £25,000, and each month it hosts a pop-up cafe, which has already raised over £7,000 for local causes. Winchester MP Steve Bryan said, "The pub trade is not easy these days, to put it mildly. In this context, it's even more impressive what Matt Todd and the team have achieved. The fact that he's done so while staying so true to the values of real ale a decent local pint and community is just great. Ben Wilkinson, National Pub of the Year coordinator, added, Matt and his team have created a fantastic rural village pub with a great atmosphere by shaping it round the community and its needs. They've realised that it takes something special to create a sense of real belonging so that people want to come out of their homes and back into the pub. He continues, pubs like the Wanston Arms highlight what communities stand to lose if their local pub closes, and that's something that's being experienced in all too many places. These types of pubs are more than just businesses, they're the heart of our local communities and part of what makes the UK the country it is. The Wanston Arms serves excellent cask ales and is a great social environment for all. It fully deserves its title as the best in the country. And that piece is accompanied by a lovely photograph with the Wanston Arms in the background and Matt and his wife in the foreground there and some regulars raising a glass to this lovely local pub.
Ex-cons hostel set for closure. A long-running hostel for ex-offenders in a village near Winchester is set to close. Elderfield House in Otterbourne is no longer financially sustainable, says its operator for the last 60 years, the Langley House Trust. For decades, it has provided a place where low- and medium-risk ex-inmates can live and undertake rehabilitation courses. One resident told the Chronicle, essentially, 13 offenders are being kicked out as of March the 27th. I can guarantee a few will go mad and commit crimes. There are other places in Winchester, such as Westview House, the Night Shelter and Keystones, but they are all full. I feel very upset and angry. I do not have anywhere else to go except back to prison. I need an opportunity and a chance to show that I have turned a corner and want to move on from crime. The resident, who asked not to be named, said the closure was a false economy. It costs £37,000 to keep a person in prison for a year, he said. A spokeswoman for the charity denied the March 27 date and said the consultation with residents and staff was ongoing. There is no date for closure, she said. She said the root cause was the ending of the Supporting People Initiative funding from the County Council in 2016. Since then, we have been trying to secure alternative sustainable funding. Very sadly, we have not got sustainable funding, and therefore the project is at risk of closure. We are at the proposal stage, but we are looking to close Elderfield. We are working with the clients to find alternative places for them to move on to. We want to make sure they are rehoused. Elderfield is the only Langley hostel where residents do a six-month Pathways to Change programme that involves cognitive behaviour therapy. Winchester MP Steve Brine, who has a long interest in penal issues, told the Chronicle, "Whatever the future for this site, we must recognise as a society that there is no real alternative to rehabilitation for those who make mistakes, and ultimately we will have to divert funds from punishment to repair. No one is beyond hope or help. The future of the building is uncertain. It belongs to the Methodist Church."
Here are the death notices. Barnes, Yvonne Barnes, at Bishop's Waltham Residential Home, aged 90. Clark, Robert Brian Clark, at Andover Nursing Home, aged 67. Cox, Catherine Jane Cox, aged 86. Crump, Ken Crump, peacefully at home, aged 92. Higgins, Ian Edward Higgins, of Droxford. Johnston, James Keith Johnston, suddenly at home, aged 83. King, Irene Renee King, at Abbott's Barton Care Home, aged 93. Pink, Alan Sidney Pink, aged 68. Smith, Julian Smith, peacefully, aged 89. And finally, Webster, Derek Greville Webster, at Winchester Hospital. And now, Daphne, could we please have Christian comment?
Yes, Christian comment. It's headed Building a Nation, and it comes from Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of the Winchester Diocese School of Mission. I have just returned from a school of mission visit to Rwanda and Burundi. I led a team of 12 people who are training in the school to learn what God is doing in these two African countries. What I saw was two complementary yet contrasting ways of building a nation. In Rwanda, change is being imposed from above by law. President Kagame, former guerrilla leader who invaded with rebels from Uganda, has been in power for 25 years since the devastating genocide of 1994. He is turning Rwanda into the Pearl of Africa, laying super smooth roads, clearing slum housing, getting rid of rubbish, corruption and crime on the streets, and using new technology. Every day we saw unmanned medical drones fly overhead, delivering blood samples to outlying areas. The church is involved in building a nation through providing health centres and education at every level. One technology college we visited, run by the church, is totally powered by solar panels. Standards of living, education and life expectancy are rising. Burundi, by contrast, appeared just as dirt poor as when I was last there 27 years ago. Riven by civil conflict and armed rebels, roads are punctuated with potholes and police checks. In Burundi, change is happening from below rather than being imposed from above. Bishops in the Lambeth Conference of 1998 initiated microfinance projects that are having an impact on over 50,000 families. Five Talents is run by the Mothers' Union, which was founded in 1876 by one of the Winchester Diocese's clergy spouses, Mary Sumner. The MU trains facilitators to offer literacy and math teaching so that people can form microcredit unions. Women are the first to join, eager to promote the well-being of their families, often against the will of their husbands. One woman was beaten by her husband for going to literacy classes and thrown outside the house for a night as a punishment. Literacy allows them to understand the numbers in the communal savings book. With enormous resilience, they start saving as little as 5 pence a week. Once they have enough credit and a track record, they can take out a loan. They often use their first loan to buy new clothes for their husbands, so they see the benefit of saving. As self-confidence and trust grows within the group, they establish mini trading businesses and move away from relying on subsistence farming. One woman now wears shoes as a sign of her dignity, in contrast to farmers who always walk barefoot. Jesus never came to establish a nation over which he would be king, instituting new laws to make people behave. He came to establish a kingdom in people's hearts, one person at a time, so that people are motivated to change themselves before longing for change in society. Christians are modelling how to establish trust within their communities, and locally based finance leads to flourishing business using God-given gifts and abilities. That too is what builds a nation.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Frieda, please.
Covert Cycles. This letter is from Sue Coles, Winchester, CTC, part of Cycling UK and Cycle Winchester. Sir, I read with interest Keith Hatter's Access for All comments on the cycle parking at St Maurice's Covert in the Chronicle Letters, February 28th. Cyclists appreciate the problems faced by those with a disability, particularly those with a visual impairment, but on this occasion we think their concerns are unfounded. The original design plans for the covert included a covered shelter for 5 cycle stands next to the Debenhams wall at the Market Lane end of the covert. Although this would have represented a significant reduction in the present number of 10 external and 5 covered stands, cycling representatives were prepared to accept that in the interests of the wider scheme, this would be good. In addition, the shelter with its stands would not have been in the way of pedestrians. That is, it would not have been in their desire line. Most pedestrians walking through the covert will be heading either for the toilets or the path that leads to the outer close. Stone benches are proposed, much closer to this desire line, and must surely represent an obstacle for those with a disability. The High Street and other central locations have multiple examples of street furniture. Benches, litter bins, terrorism barriers that present a greater problem to those with a visual impairment. The solution is for Winchester City Council to take seriously the needs of non-motorised road users and provide facilities that reflect that. Sue Coles.
And here's a letter which also refers to Keith Hatter's offering in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, and it's headed Cycle Risks. Sir, having cared for parents with cataracts and macular degeneration, I sympathise with Keith Hatter and others with visual and other impairment that navigating a crowded city centre is challenging. Yet, I would suggest the redesign rather than removal of the St. Morris covered racks could easily accommodate both Keith's legitimate concerns and mine. Bike racks were promised as part of the original planning application, but it's far from clear what, if any, alternatives the council is now offering. This is in a city with insufficient cycling rack capacity already at key locations and times. The movement strategy addresses nothing for cyclists, and yet full racks can mean a 20-minute round trip wheeling a bike through a crowded town, posing an even greater risk to the visually impaired. Surely fixed bike racks ameliorate illegally parked bikes locked in unfamiliar locations, which can only make matters worse. And in any case, market stalls, cars, buses all pose far greater dynamically changing challenges, and I'm sure Keith would not advocate removing those. I can also assure Keith that I use a bike not only as a break from working in a home office, but to shop locally, whether for stationery from Warren's, books from Waterstones, bread from Reeves, items from D&G, and so on. Now, most of these items I can obtain in 24 hours or less, and cheaper, with a mouse click from my desk. The demise of Wilds, Creative Crafts and others is directly linked to internet shopping, which has caused a corresponding increase in diesel van delivery pollution and congestion, and no doubt traffic risks for the visually impaired. In 2016, following serious surgical complications, a Winchester Cycronex e-bike helped me over a 2-year period to become mobile and learn to walk again. So let's not pit one against another on false dichotomies and assumptions based on modes of transport. A council that listened better could address our needs, and I'd happily cycle into town to buy Keith a lunchtime coffee and discuss any areas of potential mutual interest. And that comes from Nick Ray, who lives in Fordington Avenue in Fulflood.
And the next letter is from Judith Martin. She writes, Sir, there's no doubt the second round of station area plans is an improvement, but it is still too big. As the ground rises, the buildings get taller. So by the time they are opposite the station and adjacent to the old register office, which just about everyone is happy to see kept, they are vast. The handsome station building, as well as the register office, is dwarfed. And then there's the record office, designed by Hampshire County Council's RIBA gold medal winning architect Sir Colin Stansfield Smith. It too is dwarfed as the new buildings take their scale from the unloved Ashburton Court. Behind the record office is a delightful, deliberately designed area of trees, which echo in shape the ground plan of the record office itself. That will be swept away, leaving only part of the total scheme Sir Colin designed. It's an open secret that the architects didn't want to have the amount of parking Winchester City Council insists on, and it makes nonsense of the extensive report just produced by the council itself that wants to keep traffic out of the city. There could hardly be a more sustainable location, yet there will be many more cars crossing the city road lights at rush hour. Winchester is to have all this because it apparently needs the 1,000 jobs that are promised. Yet unemployment is virtually nil. It is a vicious circle. Build houses because government says we have to, not to meet genuine need. Then build huge office blocks in order to give the buyers somewhere to work. It may look good on a council briefing paper, but it really isn't a sensible way to run a historic city. It would be less disturbing if the council had a better track record of economic competence. While the High Street may not have as many empty shops as the national average, the losses are the characterful independence that the council and the BID make so much of. Yet the station approach is to have 17,000 square feet of retail space, more cafes and restaurants. And that comes from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
This next letter is headed St Clements. It's from Mark Cumberledge, Ward Chairman of the Upper Meon Valley Conservatives. Sir, I congratulate the brave person who brought to the Hampshire Chronicle's attention the emails that reveal the actions of Liberal Democrat Councillor Kim Gottlieb in your lead story in the Chronicle, February the 21st. You say he outbid the City Council to purchase the St Clements GP surgery in September 2017 for a reputed £1.65 million. And in the emails that have come to light, it show his agents now trying to sell the site back to the Council 18 months later for between £2 million and £3 million. In the Winchester City Council by-election in September last year, held in the Upper Meon Valley ward, this new Liberal Democrat councillor, Kim Gottlieb, wrote a letter to every resident in support of their Liberal Democrat candidate, saying that he had left the Conservative Party as he felt they had forgotten who they were meant to serve and were irresponsible for taxpayers' money. To call the person who showed you the emails a gutless and anonymous lowlife is quite unbelievable. In May this year, we have very important local elections which could have a say who runs the Winchester City Council. I hope the voters in these elections think very carefully before voting for a Liberal Democrat councillor who, according to your article, is looking to make a vast profit at the expense of local taxpayers. There is a letter here, editor's note. Councillor Gottlieb has denied the allegations that he is set to make a big profit for any transaction. See Chronicle Letters, February 28th.
And here's a letter which refers directly to the headline piece which Frieda read earlier. It's headed Brexit Boomtown. Sir, any discussion on a permanent permission for Boomtown needs to take into account the possible use of the westbound section of the A31 between Aylesford and Winchester as a truck park. The Hampshire Local Resilience Plan proposes a contraflow system to allow the stacking of 200 to 300 trucks waiting for the Portsmouth ferries, about a 3-mile-long queue in the event of a no-deal Brexit. Preparations for a contraflow system are to start shortly. There's the likelihood of many trucks being diverted from the much busier Dover crossing. If this worst-case scenario happens, perhaps within 30 days, then holding Boomtown is going to cause, at the very least, serious inconvenience, and at worst, gridlock in the area. There's a likelihood that the uncertainty of Brexit will run on for many months, perhaps well into the summer. Incidentally, although I am aware of the economic benefits for at least some, and the enjoyment by many of Boomtown, it seems very unwise to give permanent permission, which will give away all control over the event for the future. Although Boomtown does provide economic benefits for some and enjoyment for many, it would be very unwise to give permanent permission, which will remove the possibility of local people having a say in what happens in the future. And that letter's from Russell Gordon Smith, who lives in West Street in Aylesford.
And this letter is headed Poor Quality Anti-Terrorism Barriers. Sir, it was with a heavy heart that I and many others accepted that the terrorism prevention barriers were here to stay. And so I was delighted when Winchester City Council announced that it was replacing the ugly concrete barriers with a design more sympathetic to Winchester High Street. The idea of combining planting and seating also seemed a good one. How disappointing, then, to see the rapid deterioration of the industrial grey blocks into eyesores. The planters are evidently not waterproof, and the blocks are weathering poorly. If only natural stone with its own beauty, such as granite, had been used, we would have had something that would have stood the test of time. I presume that cost was an overriding factor in choosing the material for the blocks, but sometimes you get what you pay for, and it proves to be a false economy. And that comes from Sue Morgan, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester, and it's illustrated by a photograph of one of these new anti-terrorism barriers. And it really does look rather sad. The grey concrete block is very much stained with water and really doesn't look very nice at all.
This letter is headed Thanks, NHS, and comes from David McLean, Councillor for Bishops Waltham and Durley. Sir, I have, over the last few days, had to have recourse to the NHS at my own surgery in Bishops Waltham, at Portsmouth Queen Alexandra Hospital and at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. The care and attention I have received has been wonderful. From appointment through the GP to specialist tests and investigations, the staff I have met across the board have been second to none. All hospital appointments were on time and carried out with a genuine interest in me, the patient. Thank you, NHS, for your care and attention. David McLean.
And here's a letter from Hazel Agombar. It's headed Air of Ignorance. Sir, at the station approach consultation last Tuesday, February 26th, I was staggered to be told by a Conservative city councillor that the air pollution in Winchester, to quote, isn't that bad. The councillor continued that he didn't particularly worry about air pollution since he lives in the country. Trying to keep my cool, I advised the councillor that pollution blights the lives of many residents and workers here in Winchester. I took the opportunity to remind him that the city's pollution levels have exceeded local limits for the past 9 years. Not only do many children live with asthma as a consequence, but the pollution levels in the city are so high that they actually shorten residents' lives. How on earth could someone in his position and with his influence on decision-making be under the impression that it isn't too bad? When I pointed out that there'd been virtually no action on air pollution over the last 9 years, the councillor countered that he was focused on looking to the future. I was assured that the movement strategy will resolve the problem. Certainly it has the potential to do so, but a great deal will depend on how new developments are designed and built. I stressed that car parking spaces at the station approach development and others must be limited, with cycling and pedestrian facilities taking priority. He chuckled and said, "But car parks don't cause pollution." Does he really fail to understand the link between building more car parks and attracting more cars? I can only hope that other councillors have more of a clue on this vital issue. It is paramount that they fully comprehend both the public demand for action and the economic benefits of cleaning up our air before making decisions that will affect us all. The ignorance and lack of urgency on display last Tuesday evening was, quite literally, breathtaking. And Hazel Agomba lives in Egbert Road, Hyde, in Winchester.
And now a letter from Neil Hamer, headed Litter City. "Sir, I travel frequently around the UK and recently paid a visit to your beautiful cathedral city. I was shocked while driving into and out of the city at the squalid state of the approach roads. The A34 and the M3 on the outskirts of the city, and in particular the Winnall roundabout, are a disgrace, strewn with litter and rubbish. Seldom have I seen such an appalling mess on the roads outside a city, particularly one such as Winchester, where tourism must be an important part of the local economy. One can assume I am not the only visitor to have noticed. The authorities, as well as those throwing litter, should be shamed at the sorry state of verges on the outskirts of your city." And that's from Neil Hamer, Castle Street, Stroud, Gloucestershire.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Here are a few events that are taking place after the next 2 weeks, really, to give you time to book. From the 19th to the 23rd of March, Middle Ground Theatre Company are staging The Verdict, a powerful courtroom thriller at the Theatre Royal. Tickets cost £29 in the evenings and £28 for the Wednesday and Saturday matinees, and can be obtained by telephoning 01962 840 440. The Chisel Theatre Company are performing The Real Thing, a strong and thought-provoking play by Tom Stoppard, from the 23rd to the 30th of March. There are still a few seats available at £13 or £11 for the Sunday matinee at 4 p.m. Ring the agent's ticket source to obtain tickets on 0333 666 3366. On Friday the 22nd of March, comedian Paul McCaffrey will perform a one-off special show of the best bits of his 6 Edinburgh shows. He's very happy to be performing at the Discovery Centre in his hometown of Winchester. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. and tickets cost £15. To book, telephone 01962 873 603. And on a more serious note, on Thursday the 21st of March, there's a talk, England on the Verge of Brexit, by Professor John Denham, an ex-cabinet minister, at 6:45 p.m. at Winchester Business School, Room 1, West Downs, Romsey Road, Winchester. Brexit was made in England, but will England be remade by Brexit? It's a public lecture and no charge is mentioned. From the files brings us the historical news, starting with 200 years ago, please, Frieda.
Why, 200 years ago, Monday, March the 9th, 1819, there are two pieces from that date. Workmen are busily engaged in taking down the beautiful building, Southampton Castle, the pride of its late owner, the late most noble, the Marquis of Lansdowne. The second piece says, mad dogs are still very numerous in different parts of this county. One of them passed through the village of Somborne this week and did considerable mischief.
And here we are at 100 years ago from the edition dated Saturday, March the 8th, 1919. Two items. The first. After a lapse of just 4 years, an artificial flower exhibition is being held at the Guildhall in Winchester under the auspices of John Groom's Cripplage and Flower Girls Mission. Mr. Groom's work for afflicted, blind and crippled girls has been going on now for upwards of 50 years. The industrial cripplage, which is concerned with the making of artificial flowers, is only one department of the mission, which includes an orphanage for 250 girls and the Clacton-on-Sea Babies Villa. And the second item. The monthly meeting of the Town Council was held at the Guildhall in Winchester on Thursday morning. The Mayor said that it would be within the recollection of the Council that only a week ago they considered an offer made by the War Office to the Council of a tank as one of the memorials of the war, which could be entrusted to the care of the City of Winchester. But since then, he'd received a gentleman from the Publicity Department of the War Office who put a new light on the matter. So that ends with a mystery, doesn't it? Except I don't think we ever got our tank.
No.
And now two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, March the 8th, 1969. Winchester rates are to go up threepence halfpenny for 1969-70, the City Council agreed on Wednesday. This brings the city's portion of the rate to 5 shillings and a halfpenny, and the total rate levied to Grant now 1 and threepence. In the light of the simultaneous announcement that the bank rate had risen to 8%, the increase in the rate was readily accepted by the council. Councillor Michael Gardner commented, "As events have turned out, this was a very wise move." Alderman Eric Neat, Chairman, Finance and General Purposes Committee, presenting the new rate, said that they had decided on the amount rather than twopence halfpenny after considerable forethought. "We regarded it as a prudent step, because if things went wrong, the extra penny would have to be paid off next year anyway," he said. "The increased rate should be seen in the light of a net city requirement of £410,565 this year," he said. And the second item, a local police officer has been recommended by Winchester City Council as a candidate for the National Trophy for the Road Safety of Children. He is PC Edward William Harry Wedge of Sparsholt, near Winchester, on whom a citation has been submitted to RossBars Accident Prevention Federation for the counties of Hampshire, Surrey and Berkshire. RossBar, of course, standing for the Royal Society for the Prevention of Accidents. "This citation will be considered with those forwarded by other local authorities in these areas, and one will be selected for national adjudication on June the 3rd, when nominees from RossBar federations throughout Britain will be interviewed in London. The trophy, presented by Shell Mex and BP Limited, will go to the person adjudged to have done most for child road safety during 1968. PC Wedge's road safety work dates from 1964, when he was posted to the district.
We go on to editorial comment. Oh. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. I've completely forgotten 25 years ago. That's my fault. Frieda's been waving at me like mad. Let us have 25 years ago, please,
oh,
Fringer.
Oh, you're going to love it. Right, 25 years ago, Friday, March the 11th, 1994, and there are two items for this. Latour will be hitting Winchester on July the 7th, bringing with it spectacular free entertainment and potentially crippling traffic chaos. That was the message to a packed meeting of the Winchester Chamber of Commerce, which heard about the pros and cons of hosting the world's largest annual sporting event. The key message is to be positive. Latour is coming, so we might as well enjoy it and take advantage of this wonderful opportunity to put our city on the map, said Clive Wyatt, head of tourism at Winchester City Council. Latour, he said, was not just a cycle race, but a huge travelling carnival consisting of 3,500 people and 1,700 vehicles, along with a cavalcade of novelty vehicles advertising products, 1,000 journalists and photographers, and 180 of the world's top cyclists. In addition, hundreds of thousands of spectators are expected to line the route. In France, there is often upwards of 1 million people on each stage. All will be travelling through Winchester between 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. on July the 7th. Their route is down the Alsford Road, up the Broadway and High Street, right into Sussex Street and out on the Andover Road. Competitors can gain extra points in a sprint finish on Andover Road, so, in the words of one organiser, they'll be going like bats out of hell through Winchester. The second item is much more sobering. 300 people sat enthralled in the Guildhall, Winchester, on Wednesday evening, listening to the concentration camp experiences of Leon Greenman, a Jew who survived Auschwitz. Mr. Greenman, now aged 84, had been invited to Winchester by the Anti-Nazi League. The League is campaigning to have the Winchester neo-Nazi bus driver, John Morse, removed from his job with Hampshire Bus. There was a discreet police presence at the meeting and outside the Guildhall, and there were barriers along the Broadway in case of demonstrations by neo-Nazis, but these did not materialise. Mr. Greenman wears an identification tag with his concentration camp number 98288. With hardly any pauses, he spoke for an hour and a quarter, recalling his life from birth in the East End of London in 1910, being caught in Holland as a Jew in 1940, and because of his inability to prove British citizenship in time, his removal to Auschwitz. As his audience sat in rapt attention, he told of the horrifying years in Buchenwald, Auschwitz and other camps, the cruelty of SS guards, and certain phrases recurred. They never showed any kindness whatsoever. They shot us right to the end. He ended his talk with this warning. Please, don't let me keep on fighting by myself. You are all in danger from Nazis, BNP or National Front. You are entitled to a peaceful life. Mr. Greenman was given a standing ovation.
In order to give Frieda a little rest, I think we will go on to first person, please, John, and then we'll go back to editorial comment. So, over to you.
Yes, first person this week is by Khalid Aziz, and Khalid's been on his holidays. He heads his piece, Carry On Up the Nile. To Egypt, with a party of 16 like-minded friends and friends of friends to tick off something that's been on our bucket list for years. The pyramids, the Sphinx, and a leisurely sail down that most iconic of rivers, the Nile. We kicked off with a couple of nights in Cairo. I thought it might be challenging, but we were all rather taken aback by our first Egyptian hotel, chosen for its location near the Great Pyramid at Giza. Granted, the view of the pyramids was pretty good, but strangely, its website didn't mention that it sat in a stench-filled midden, continually topped up by the local camels and horses. nor the rather grasping character who operated the hotel with a larcenous vigour redolent of the innkeeper in Les Miserables, as he appeared to add in the date to our bills. Thankfully, this turned out to be in sharp contrast to the rest of the Egyptians we met, including the innkeeper's staff, who were charm personified. The Egyptians have had a tough time of it lately with tourists put off by terrorism, but they have so much to offer and show off, and they know they need the tourists. Even their hawkers get it, and are nothing like as pushy as their counterparts in other African cities, backing off instantly at the first sign of discomfort with the words, OK, Effendi, no hassle. The high spot was the treasures of Tutankhamun, housed in the Cairo Museum, complete with 11 kilos of solid gold burial mask. Then it was off south to Luxor to pick up our boat, but not before an early morning balloon ride over temples bordering the Valley of the Kings. If you were a king, they cheerily started building your tomb as soon as you ascended the throne, decorating the walls with stunning hieroglyphics, which even today, 3,000 or 4,000 years later, still have their vibrant colours. This was time-consuming work, and it all stopped once you dropped off the papyrus. The priests then started the 70-day mummification process, thoughtfully extracting your giblets for storage in special jars alongside your wrapped corpse. Our boat, a dahabeah, ancient but serviceable, floating, shabby and chic, towed initially by its own tug, but wind permitting, driven elegantly by a striped lateen sail. And we sank into a routine that's changed little since the days of Victorian tourists, taking in the biblical bankside views of camels and donkeys, nudging into a bank to be conveyed by ancient horse and trap to a local temple. And what buildings they were in both scale and sophistication, their meaning translated from remarkably preserved carved symbology by our knowledgeable guide Adil. Having studied Egyptology for 4 years, he could actually read the hieroglyphics. You couldn't help but marvel at such a civilization. Carvings depict surgical instruments similar to those of today. They even had anaesthetics and pregnancy tests, which could not only predict the happy event, but with 80% accuracy, also foretell the infant's sex. Modern Egypt is a paradox. Wonderful and well-preserved antiquities, hospitable and willing people, but the security is very obvious, with considerable investment going into building protected roadside police posts every mile. There were lots of guns on show, but we never felt unsafe, even in Cairo. And as you moved further south towards Aswan, you felt the people were more at ease with themselves. The Nile is truly one of the great rivers of the world, and is mostly unspoilt. The people are wonderful too, but watch out for that hotel owner.
And now, Frieda, can we have the editorial comment?
Yes. Now, this editorial comment refers back to something which I believe Daphne read about earlier. It's the closure of a much-needed hostel. There will be some villagers in Otterbourne who will be glad to hear the news that Elderfield, the ex-offender's hostel, is likely to be closing soon. The Langley House Trust has operated the hostel on Main Road since the 1960s. Thousands of men newly released from prison have passed through its doors, attempting to turn their lives around. The Trust says that the loss of a grant from the County Council, brought on by cutbacks in central government funding to local government in 2016, is the root cause of the measure. Langley will say that no resident will be left to their own devices and alternative places to live will be found for them. But, as one of the residents told the Chronicle, the closure is likely to lead to great disruption for men who previously had some stability in their lives and goals to aim for. Many of these men will have underlying drugs or mental health issues, and post-prison life is difficult enough for them. The likely upshot is an increased risk of reoffending and more men returning to prison. It costs thousands of pounds to keep a person inside jail, a place where very little rehabilitation work can be done. Is this a sensible use of public money? Cutting grants to local authorities that means cuts for charities such as Langley House Trust, but leading later to greater public expense in running prisons.
Belgarum gives us an alternative look at some of the news. So, Daphne, can we have that, please?
Right, now, Belgarum writes, is street name one word or two? Middlebrook or Middlebrook? Opinion is divided, judging by the evidence in Winchester city centre yesterday. The City Council car parking station says Middlebrook, whilst the Hope Church behind has Middle Brook. That's illustrated by a photograph showing the car park pay station at the forefront, perfectly plainly reading Middlebrook, and then looming at the back, the Hope Church with the Middle Brook Centre. The official name of the street is Middle Brook Street. The three historic Brook Streets are so named because streams run under the roads. And the second item from Belgarum, Joshua helps change airport windsock. Joshua Garton had his dream come true when he was invited to Southampton Airport to help change the windsock. The 20-year-old has a passion for windsocks and has a collection of around 50. He contacted the airport to ask if he could have an old windsock. Little did he expect to be invited to change one himself. Dan Townsend, head of aerodrome operations, said, "We were delighted to help Joshua fulfil his dream and change the windsock. We are huge supporters of anyone with an interest in anything aviation related."
Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 8th of March at 6:36 a.m. and begins again at 5:58 p.m. On Wednesday the 14th of March, it ends at 6:24 a.m. and begins again at 6:06 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired or would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news. Over to you, Frieda.
This piece is called Latest News on Flood Prevention. Residents and businesses in Winchester will be able to find out more about a major flood scheme. An event at the Guildhall Courtyard on March 19th and 20th, between noon and 3 p.m, will provide information on the second phase of the North Winchester Flooding Alleviation Scheme. Officers from Hampshire County Council, the Environment Agency, Winchester City Council and flood modelling experts will be on hand to talk to attendees. Portfolio holder for Built Environment at the City Council, Councillor Caroline Brooke, said, "This project will help to protect many more homes and businesses in central Winchester, and it is really important that people get a chance to have more detailed looks at the plans so they can understand how the scheme will work and will reduce the risk of their property being affected by flooding in the future." This comes after a January report showed how the City Mill and City Bridge could be destroyed if flood defence works were not carried out. Civic chiefs rushed through a decision to approve an additional £500,000 spending. The money was approved by the City Council's Cabinet and to be spent on the second phase, which will introduce sluice gates on the uncontrolled river courses that flow through the city to control water levels further upstream. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Environment and Transport at the County Council, said, "Since the severe winter of 2013 and 14, we've been working with our partners on measures to help mitigate the impact of flooding in Winchester in the future. We are now inviting local businesses and residents to come and look at the plans and talk to the project team so they can find out more. Work is due to begin this autumn and is expected to be completed by the end of the year.
Final nod for city's £38 million leisure centre. Civic chiefs have finally approved Winchester's new sport and leisure centre. City councillors backed the £38 million scheme at full council meeting last Thursday. The facilities, featuring a 50-metre pool and 8-court sports hall, will be built by Wilmot Dixon. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "The development of the Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre will bring a fantastic state-of-the-art facility to Winchester. This is great news for our residents who've been working closely with us throughout. So many people are looking forward to these exciting plans becoming a reality. We're delighted that the decision taken by the council today means that the final green light for the project has been given. We've worked so hard to keep this project on track, and that we are now pleased that construction can now start on site." Liberal Democrat critics said the centre's facilities are too limited for the projected increase in population of the district over the next 30 years. They had called for a 12-court sports hall rather than 8, which is the same size as the current River Park Leisure Centre. To celebrate work starting on site, a video has been released by Winchester City Council. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and wellbeing, said, "This centre is set in Parkland and designed to promote the feeling of health and relaxation. It will be a fantastic place for everyone to gather and enjoy." Local clubs and teams have also been heavily involved in the plans. Mike Fisher from Winchester Penguin Swimming Club said, "We're really excited about the pools included at the new centre. We look forward to making this our new home, and the 50-metre pool will give us a unique opportunity to compete with the biggest swim programmes in the country and extend our community programme locally. Construction at the Garrison Ground will start later this month, and the centre is due to open in 2021.
Now, the next item tells you more about what Vara mentioned, the headline about pancakes and the cathedral. So, pancake chaos, in quotes, on Shrove Tuesday. Flipping chaos was served to a crowd of spectators outside Winchester Cathedral during the inaugural Shrove Tuesday pancake race. The event was organised by Winchester Rotary, and a course was set up in Cathedral Close using cones to outline two straight lanes with waiting zones at either end. It saw 20 teams go head-to-head in the relay, including groups of supermarket staff, Hampshire firefighters, charity workers and members of the cathedral. Vice Dean Reverend Canon Roland Riem left the track after completing his two lengths and told the Chronicle, "Oh, it's very windy, but it's okay. It just furthers the chaos to this brilliant charity event. This is a fantastic turnout. What I have learnt, though, is that the technique is mostly in the knees and hips." Competitors were given a frying pan with a pancake in and were told to flip it at the start line, sprint along the lanes, flip it again at the halfway mark, and then head to the end to swap with a teammate. Former Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, was part of the ex-Mayor's team, along with Councillor Richard Izzard, Councillor Dominic Hiscock and Councillor Therese Evans. She said, "Well, I think the others slowed me down a bit. Of course, us old mayors don't usually do running, and our combined age is 268 years, so we did well. But being here was a bit of fun, and wearing the robes added a bit of gravitas too." The overall winning team with the fastest time was a group of children from St Bede Primary School in Gordon Road. And I think we might expect that, as they're young children who can run very fast.
I don't know about the flipping the pancake.
Well, maybe. An award was also presented to the group of workers from Winchester Night Shelter on Jury Street for having the best attire. Also taking part were soldiers and a team from Winchester Fire Station. City Councillor Derek Green, who was at the event, said, "It's nice to see it being so well supported. The turnout is impressive and it's been really fun to watch. Proceeds from the event will go to Winchester Cathedral and be distributed to local charities, and it's illustrated with some lovely photographs. The first one is a fireman in his uniform, but he seems to be wearing a chef's hat. Then we've got the Vice Dean, Roland Rehm, in full stride, wearing his red robes, but with a flat cap. And finally, a choir boy whose pancake has flipped right into his face, so we can't actually see him."
This piece is, sorry, still laughing about the choir boy, is called Hursley on a High, and it's about indoor cricket. Hursley Park ladies travelled to Germany at the weekend to take part in the inaugural Dresden International Women's Indoor Championships and enhance their already impressive indoor cricketing CV by bringing home the trophy. The reigning ECB national indoor champions were up against teams from Austria and Germany and played four group games on Saturday, winning them all to qualify for the final. Although the basics of the game in Europe are consistent with the English format, there were a few differences for the Hursley girls to get to grips with. The game was played in a much larger hall and with eight players aside rather than six. There are also some quirks to the scoring system, but the girls in green adapted well and impressed the locals, particularly with a fine display of fielding. In Sunday's final, Hursley were up against the Austrian national side, which included some impressive players. But the strength in depth of the English team proved crucial, as there were more important contributions from most players in a 35-run victory. The Hursley girls also returned with three individual awards: Courtney Lohman picking up the Bowler of the Tournament award, Harriet Batchelor voted Batter of the Tournament, and Charlotte Taylor carrying off the overall MVP Player of the Weekend. Interestingly, although all were teammates at the weekend, there will be some internal rivalry this coming Sunday when Hursley's A and B teams, both including members of the successful European squad, go head-to-head at Eastleigh for the Southants League title.
Theft of high-value watch from city shop. Police have launched a search for two people after a £25,000 watch was stolen in broad daylight. The watch, Patek Philippe, was taken from Carter Marsh & Company in the Square, Winchester, sometime between 1:45 and 2:15 on Friday. Officers say a man and a woman entered the shop and asked to see the watch, but when they were told they could not pay in cash, they left. Staff later realised they'd taken the watch without paying. They were later seen meeting a larger group of people before they all left in a silver Ford Galaxy and a grey Honda Accord by way of Mourne Hill. The stolen object has been described as a Patek Philippe 18-carat white gold watch with a blue crocodile strap. Police have released images of a man and a woman they want to speak to, as well as an image of the watch.
Action taken against misuse of blue badges. Nearly a dozen drivers have been caught out after a crackdown on misuse of disabled parking badges in Winchester. Hampshire County Council says 10 badges have now been retained after they were found to have been misused on the city's streets. Those found to have been misusing blue badges can face fines of up to £5,000, as well as a criminal record. Councillor Roy Perry, County Council leader, said, "This operation with our partners sends out a strong message that Hampshire County Council is committed to stamping out this type of offence. Blue badge fraud and misuse is not a victimless crime. The actions of unentitled drivers who break the law and risk a criminal record put disabled residents at a real disadvantage, taking away spaces from those who genuinely rely on the Blue Badge scheme. During the operation in Winchester, which took place during February 2019, teams found three cases that were serious enough for further investigation, while the other seven were dealt with by formal warnings. In the last 3 years, the Enforcement Partnership has retained over 1,300 badges for misuse across the county. The County Council, as the Blue Badge Issuing Authority, is responsible for Blue Badge enforcement within the county. Together with the District and Unitary Councils, who are responsible for their local parking enforcement, the authorities work together to identify potential or proven misuse and respond to allegations of misuse. The council warns it is a criminal offence, one, for a person using a badge that does not belong to them, two, to alter a badge, three, to create a copy of a badge, four, to use an expired badge, and five, to commit any form of fraud relating to the use of a blue badge.
This piece is called Helping to Preserve the Past. Volunteers have put their camera skills to the test as part of a project to protect Winchester's heritage. The Winchester Future 50 project is being used as part of conservation area management plans being put together by Winchester City Council's Historic Environment team. A dozen volunteers spent a day taking photos of a variety of landmarks in the St Giles Hill and the walled town areas of the city. Portfolio holder for Built Environment, Councillor Caroline Brooke, said, "This exciting project helps protect and enhance the district's rich heritage, now and into the future. It is great to see so many volunteers taking part and demonstrating passion and enthusiasm, so these areas are well managed for decades to come. The information and pictures are vital to this project, and I thank the volunteers for all their contributions." The day was part of a series of surveys being carried out by volunteers from the City of Winchester Trust, Winchester University and Winchester College to help identify the sites that make up conservation areas.
Kevin MacLeod says, "I'm sorry for delays." A TV presenter and developer has apologised for delays at a housing project near Winchester and also blamed Brexit. Kevin MacLeod of the show Grand Designs said there'd been project overruns at Eversley Gardens in Kingsworthy, which is being developed by his company, HAB, Happiness, Architecture, Beauty Housing. It comes after Senior City Councillor Jackie Porter called on HAB to fulfil pledges and build community facilities as part of planning approval given as long ago as September 2015. HAB agreed that Eversley Park would double in size with a new allotment, cycle rack, play area, orchard and car park. The land would be given to Kingsworthy Parish Council to protect it from future development. But now Mr MacLeod's firm has issued a statement saying a Brexit-fuelled construction crisis has hit the industry, causing soaring costs and a shortage of skilled workers. Mr MacLeod said, "As an SME, that's a small and medium-sized enterprise house builder, we've been hit hard by rocketing costs and a construction skills crisis, both of which are being exacerbated by Brexit uncertainty and the fall in the pound." He continued, "Of course, Brexit is absolutely no excuse for the poor service residents have received, and I'm close to striking a deal to bring new partners whose expertise and financial backing will enable HAB to deliver something I can be proud of. I'm hopeful of being able to make that announcement very shortly. I am absolutely determined that my own business, HAB, will come through its current challenges." Mr MacLeod added, "I'm personally very sorry for the delays and problems caused. Things haven't been done quickly enough. I share our residents' frustrations, and I'm putting a plan in place to fix them." Speaking to the Chronicle last week, Councillor Porter said, The Kingsworthy community chose this as their preferred site because the developer, HAB, offered so many community benefits. But to date, most of these have come to naught, as work on the site seems to have stopped completely. It did all seem too good to be true. And there's a picture of Kevin MacLeod accompanying that article, looking quite worried, as he's entitled to be.
Students highlight dangers of climate change in show at Theatre Royal. With the world at an environmental crisis point, the University of Winchester presents Climate for Change on Monday, March the 11th. It will be an evening dedicated to showing the human stories at the centre of the global issue of climate change. The plays are written by creative writing students and will be performed by students from the Performing Arts Department. Tickets can be purchased from the Theatre Royal's website for £5 each. Creative writing programme leader Glenn Fosbray, who produces the show, along with Head of Performing Arts Stephen Hall, said, "Climate change is an issue that no one should be ignoring, and at the University of Winchester, it's always central to our way of working and thinking. It's our duty to create a dialogue with our students to ensure they are conscious of climate change and that turning our backs on it and pretending it's not happening isn't an option. The arts have always been key in starting up conversations about the big subjects, and these four original plays present one small step on the way to alerting people of the crucial environmental issues facing us all." The Theatre Royal and the University have collaborated in the past to provide alternate productions of Shakespeare plays and evenings of original theatre. The stage at the Theatre Royal on Jury Street provides current students and graduates a magnificent opportunity to showcase written works, plays and sketches to the public.
This piece is about a new book to help bereaved families. A Chandler's Ford mother of four has published a book to give back to the charity that helped her through mental illness. When Caroline Meach first met Ruth Palmer, her life changed. At the time, Caroline was suffering from postnatal depression. The two women struck up conversation on the school run before Ruth made her apologies, saying she had to go as she was marking the birthday of her son Jethro, who had died the year before. Caroline said, "It was one of those moments that I just couldn't quite take in what she was saying. There she was, this woman, who I couldn't begin to imagine what she was going through, and there was me, unable to find a way out of how I was feeling, but who had what this woman was grieving for the loss of." Ruth and Tony Palmer's third child, Jethro Courage, died in his sleep, aged 1.5, in March 2015. It was in his name that the family set up the Courage Foundation UK, a charity that supports families with bereaved children. Ruth said establishing the charity was based on their own experience of helping their children find the fun again after the loss of their sibling. She said, "It was a very difficult time. There we had our new baby girl, and at the same time, we were grieving for the loss of our little boy. A little while after, a friend gave us money, which we used to pay for a day out at Poulton's Park. It was one of the first times that we found we were all smiling and having fun. I remember turning to Tony and saying, 'We have to do this for other people.' Last year, the Courage Foundation paid for more than 500 tickets, annual passes, and weekend breaks for families with bereaved children to enjoy. Along with volunteering with administrative work, Caroline has published her first children's storybook, with proceeds going towards the Courage Foundation UK. And there's a lovely photo with Ruth on the left with her son Boaz, and on the right, Caroline Meach. And they're both wearing Courage T-shirts."
Friends of the Family charity celebrates. Over 70 guests helped a Winchester charity's annual general meeting celebrate its 25th anniversary. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, and the High Sheriff of Hampshire, Mark Thistlethwaite, joined Friends of the Family associates at the lunch. Councillor Pearson told them, "I've been involved with Friends of the Family for many years now, and it's a pleasure to be here today to recognise the valuable work they do and to celebrate with them. You support families who are very much alone without family members close by to help them. You help to pick up the pieces of families and make a positive difference to their lives. So, thank you so much on behalf of everyone in Winchester." Anne Tittman, who co-founded the charity in 1993, also attended the celebration along with the charity's patron, Bishop John Dennis, and former chairman, Andrew Rutter. The charity offers guidance to vulnerable young families, providing twice-weekly support groups for mums with young children, a befriending service for children aged 5 to 13, and one-to-one counselling for dads and a monthly dads group. And that's accompanied by a lovely picture of some very proud and happy charity members raising a glass to celebrate the success of the group. And one of them looks exactly like my Auntie Fran, but it can't be her because she lives in Liverpool.
And now an item on a topic which we have already mentioned. I think John had a piece about it. Councillors have narrowly backed a controversial budget which includes spending for Winchester's new multi-million pound leisure centre, as well as a council tax freeze for residents. In a heated meeting of Winchester City Council, members voted along party lines, except for Liberal Democrat Richard Izzard, who broke ranks to praise the work of the Conservative administration. Much of the criticism related to the inclusion of spending for the new leisure centre, with opposition councillors saying more scrutiny was needed. The spending on the leisure centre was included in the council's capital investment strategy, which was approved by 23 votes to 20, Councillor Izzard abstaining. As previously reported, most of the concerns centre around the plans to only include an 8-court sports hall rather than the 12-court facility originally proposed. Despite being larger, the sports hall would still have the same number of courts as River Park, the leisure centre it is replacing. During the meeting last Thursday, finance portfolio holder Councillor Guy Ashton gave a presentation addressing claims that have been made against the project over the past year. However, Lib Dem leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "It is a missed opportunity to build a facility with the right-sized sports hall. I don't know what world Councillor Ashton is living in."
This piece is called Skating for Girls at Jam. That's a skating jam, not the other kind. Skateboarders from as far afield as London attended a Winchester skate jam organised to get more girls on boards. The session was arranged by Peter Simmons student Emily Maynard and saw a wide range of girls turn up at River Park Leisure Centre, including a four-year-old from Brighton. Local store Beans and Boards and skateboard shop J&J's in Totten both helped run the activities and provided a raffle, while selling refreshments throughout the day. Phoebe Gubb, who has recently moved with her husband to Winchester and attended the event, said, "This was a really good event for girls to get together and celebrate the sport and as a bonus raise some money. I was amazed at the sponsors and their generosity, but most importantly, the skate scene can be for girls too, and we do not have to be afraid to go into local skate parks provided by the council. Proceeds from the event will go to SkatePal, a non-profit organisation that provides skateboarding opportunities to young people in Palestine."
And here's a teaser of a headline, but all will become clear. Boxers settle into new home. Members of Winchester's amateur boxing club were pictured smiling, having settled into their new venue in Bar End. the group was forced to move from the old site a stone's throw away at the garrison ground, which is going to be demolished to make way for the new £38 million leisure centre. Now the club, which was launched in 2013, train at Unit 7 in Barfield Close, offering competitive classes to all ages over 5 years. Non-contact boxing for fitness purposes is also available, and there are 2 free spaces for every session for people with a disability or from the night shelter. Coaches also run an anger management project dedicated to help local residents deal with emotional and behavioural disorders through traditional Olympic boxing methods. The club is affiliated with England Boxing, and all coaches are DBS checked and England Boxing qualified. It's open 7 days a week, with classes costing £3 per child for anyone up to the age of 18 and £5 for anyone over.
Council boost for communities. 2 community buildings in Winchester will be renovated following investments from Hampshire County Council. This comes as part of a county-wide scheme to maintain community buildings, which has given £130,000 so far. St Paul's Church has received £25,000 to remodel and provide new meeting spaces, a kitchen, toilets, a utility room, a lift, improved heating and an extended staging for arts performances. Wake Community Centre will use £22,140 to repair a leaking roof, replace flooring and install emergency lighting, double glazing and an accessible door. The funding was agreed at Councillor Sean Woodward's Recreation and Heritage Decision Day on February the 25th. Councillor Woodward said, "We work with community associations and village hall trusts, which seek to enable local people to meet the recreation, educational, social, cultural and environmental needs of their local communities. These organisations give local people an opportunity to participate in local activities and encourage local initiatives by people of all ages."
This is a crash appeal. The police are appealing for 2 people who helped following a serious collision in Alsford that injured a teenager. Officers were called to Bishop Sutton Road shortly after 6 p.m. on Wednesday, February the 27th, following a collision involving a car and a cyclist on an unlit section of the road. The 16-year-old cyclist suffered serious injuries and he was taken to hospital. The driver of the Kia Soul, an 82-year-old man from Alsford, was uninjured. Investigations into the circumstances are ongoing, and police are keen to speak to 2 people who stopped to help but left before police arrived. These people may have information which would help with the investigation.
Probe into council leak. An investigation has been launched to find the source of an alleged City Council leak of confidential information. It follows the news in the Hampshire Chronicle that Liberal Democrat councillor Kim Gottlieb had entered negotiations with Winchester City Council over the sale of St Clement's Surgery, a key site within the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, otherwise known as Silver Hill 2. The investigation was revealed at last week's full council meeting when fellow Lib Dem councillor Brian Laming asked, "Can the leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell, and the chief executive, Laura Taylor, assure this chamber that they will put every effort into finding the, quote, well-placed source of the leak of highly confidential papers to the local press?" He continued, "It's an extraordinary breach of confidentiality and puts the council's reputation in jeopardy." Councillor Caroline Horrell said in response, "It's indeed very disappointing that the matter before the chamber this evening has been extensively reported in the local press. The chief executive has initiated an investigation, and should the source of the release of any confidential information be established, appropriate action will be taken." As the council was about to enter confidential discussions about a land transaction believed to be the St Clement's surgery, there were calls for greater transparency by Conservative councillor Fiona Mather. And fellow Conservative councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for professional services, said, "We've had significant problems debating about this property. Would it not be possible to have the debate in open session, which would then remove any problem?" The move to openly discuss the transaction was defeated in a vote, with Liberal Democrat councillors refusing to take any further part. Their leader, Councillor Lucille Thompson, said that the party would not be taking part in the debate once the meeting had gone behind closed doors. Following the meeting, Councillor Gottlieb said, "Of course, everything about this matter must be made public in time, but the issue has becoming one of the integrity of the council. Someone in a senior position within the council has leaked and manipulated confidential information for political purposes. This embarrasses the council, and in the absence of the culprit being identified, it casts a shadow over the council's decision-making processes in respect of St Clement's." And that's accompanied by a rather sad picture of St Clement's surgery, all closed up and shuttered, looking very tatty and unloved.
I still go to St Clement.
It's still open, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
It's tell the bloke just put the big metal door there.
Anyway, that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Free Debates.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye, and do have a good week. And please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.